All right, let's turn over to the book of Acts, chapter 20. We've been working through the life of Paul, and we are in the third missionary journey. Paul is about to leave the city of Ephesus, and with an eye towards going toward into Macedonia and then eventually back to Jerusalem. So we're going to be covering Acts chapter 20 today. We're going to take a little bit of a diversion into 2 Corinthians for a bit, just to kind of go down a rabbit hole, and then hopefully come out of that a little bit more edified. So, last week we finished up Acts chapter 19 and kind of wrapped up with the whole Diana incident and some of the things that had happened there. And, you know, you start really considering what had gone on there. It was really, I guess the bottom line is that people are easily led astray to riot by the fraud of designing men. And that's kind of what we left off with in the city of Ephesus. So let's start here in verse 20. We're going to read down through verse 6, and then we're going to kind of come back and look at some detail here. So Acts chapter 20, beginning in verse 1. After the uproar had ceased, Paul sent for the disciples, and when he had exhorted them and taken his leave of them, he left to go to Macedonia. When he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. And there he spent 3 months, and when a plot was formed against him by the Jews, he was about to, by the Jews, as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. And he was accompanied by Sopater of Berea, the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus, and Trophimus of Asia. But these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. We sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to them at Troas within 5 days, and there we stayed 7 days. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. Okay, so a number of things are going on here. Before we get into all the detail in that, knowing that he had just left the city of Ephesus and then went into Troas and then ultimately into, well, it doesn't say Troas here. That's a rabbit hole we're going to go down here in a minute. With his goal towards going into Macedonia, let's chat a little bit about some of the additional things that Paul had done in Ephesus, because these things are going to have some impact on what we talk about here in Macedonia. So we see here in with Paul's departure that there were a number of things that he was planning on. And I'm going to get ahead of myself if I'm not careful here. So first of all, one of the things that had happened while Paul was still in Ephesus was that Sosthenes was there. He joined Paul in writing to the Corinthians. So you'll see Sosthenes in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 1. Also, while Paul was in Ephesus, he had been visited by Stephanus, Fortunatus, and Achaicus, mentioned in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Aquila and Priscilla, whom we've spent some time talking about, they hosted the church in their house, and they sent greetings to those in Corinth. So Paul continues to have interactions with these folks, a number of verses we can go to, but we won't for this morning. Also, of course, Paul, as is normally the case, when he's in a city and he spends any amount of time there, he has some sufferings that he endures in Ephesus. Sorry, I'm going to get some water. Thank you, sir. No, that's all right. Love that smoke in the air. There we go. Okay. So, Paul had undergone some sufferings and some preachings in Ephesus. In Acts chapter 20, let's jump over to verse 17, when he's talking to the Ephesian elders in Miletus, he account or relates some of these sufferings to them. Verse 17 of Acts chapter 20, he says, "From Miletus he sent to Ephesus, called to him the elders of the church. And when they had come to him, he said to them, 'You yourselves know, from the first day that I set foot in Asia, how I was with you the whole time, serving the Lord with all humility and with tears, and with trials which came upon me through the plots of the Jews.'" So Paul is normally the case when he's in an area, he's being persecuted by the Jews. And I think this is some reference to what he had undergone in the theater in Ephesus. He had mentioned it in a couple of other things that we won't go to today, but he does mention it as well in his letters to the Corinthians in 1 and 2 Corinthians. Quite a bit of context there that, again, if you're interested, I can give you the notes for those. But the point is that he had undergone some suffering that we've already worked through. Paul had preached, obviously, quite a bit while he was in Ephesus, really a considerable amount of it, a whole bunch of it in Acts chapter 20 that he'll be making some reference to that we're actually going to talk about more about when we discuss what he talks to the Ephesian elders about, so I won't go there for today. And the other thing that I do want to mention is that Paul, he wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty. He did manual labor when he needed to support himself. He mentions that in Acts chapter 20 as well, verses 33 through 35. And again, we'll cover that when we get to that particular section. He mentions it as well in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. The point is that Paul was a very busy guy. He didn't just sit around. And when he needed to, he'd go out and make tents. He'd engage in manual labor to support himself. And it's a good example, really, for any of us, especially if we want to try to be evangelists, or if you're going to go out and make a difference in regards to that, and you're going to be a preacher, you got to be ready and willing to work. Lots of examples we can use there, but for the sake of time, we will not. Okay, so these are some of the things that Paul had been able to accomplish while he was in Ephesus. And when he leaves, one of the things that happens here is when he's leaving Ephesus, there's a turmoil that's brewing, obviously, with this whole situation with Diana. And seeing an opportunity to leave, and really that drives him out, Acts chapter 20, verse 1, he sends for the disciples, and he says, hey, I'm going to take this opportunity to leave to go to Macedonia. Okay, so let's jump over to Acts chapter 19, verse 21, real quickly. This opportunity to leave Ephesus as a result of some of this turmoil basically helps to solidify some of the plans that Paul had made earlier. Acts chapter 19, verse 21, he says, "Now after these things were finished, Paul purposed in the Spirit to go to Jerusalem after he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, saying, 'After I have been there, I must also see Rome.'" So Paul had made plans to go into Macedonia, but ultimately to end up in Jerusalem, something that Luke records for us here in verse 21. So in doing so, Paul heads towards Macedonia. Now, when he writes to the Corinthians, let's go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Paul makes a reference here, makes a comment about a quick stop that he makes on his way from Ephesus to Macedonia. So if you have a map, one of those maps that I printed out for you, if you don't, you probably have one in your Bible. You'll see that Ephesus is down, obviously, on the western coast of Asia there, on the eastern shore of the Aegean Sea. And Macedonia is on the northwestern shore of the Aegean Sea. And so you can kind of see, you follow the arrows, he goes from Ephesus, he makes a stop in the city of Troas, and then he continues on into Macedonia. It's the stop in Troas that he mentions here in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 12 and 13, that I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this morning. So, verses 12 and 13, 2 Corinthians chapter 2. "Now, when I came to Troas for the gospel of Christ, and when a door was opened for me in the Lord, I had no rest for my spirit, not finding Titus my brother, but taking my leave of them, I went on to Macedonia." So Paul is making reference to this trip from Ephesus to Macedonia. Notice that Acts chapter 20 doesn't mention this, doesn't mention this stop in Troas. He just says he went from Ephesus to Macedonia, essentially. Okay, so there's a couple of things that I started looking into this, and this is kind of where I spent probably way too much time on my studies to in this, but I found it interesting. But what does he mean here by the open door? A door was opened for me in the Lord. Now, keep this in mind. Go back over to Acts chapter 20. And just note here, verse 1, he had left and exhorted them, taken his leave of them. He left to go to Macedonia. When he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. So there's two verses here that describes Paul's trip from Ephesus to Greece and on in, but doesn't mention anything about stopping in Troas. But Paul takes a moment when he's writing to the Corinthians that he stopped in Troas, and he mentions this door that was opened to him in the Lord. So, what is the door? What is it that he was talking about? Now, I will tell you that there's really no good, solid, 100%, absolutely tie-it-down answer. I think there are several possibilities. I think there are three primary possibilities of what he was talking about. I have my own opinions. But what does he mean by this open door? Well, I think probably the most commonly accepted one is that it could mean that he was talking about the opportunity to preach in Troas. Okay? Now, I'm not sure that this is the case. I'm not convinced. But, and partially because recall that Paul had sent 2 Corinthians. Oh, let me back up for just a second. One of the reasons why Paul stopped in Troas was because he had sent Titus with the second letter to the Corinthians, and he was intending on meeting him back there. Okay? Verse 13, 2 Corinthians, chapter 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 13. He said, I had no rest for my spirit, not finding Titus my brother, but taking my leave of them, I went on to Macedonia. So Paul had been expecting to meet Titus in Troas, because Titus had been sent ahead of him to go down to Corinth to deliver that second letter. And apparently Paul had made plans to meet Titus in Troas. Okay, clear as mud? Okay. So, but he didn't meet him there. So, he didn't find Titus in Troas. So, instead, Paul continues on to Macedonia, as we read here in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 13, where he does eventually encounter Titus. Okay? So, let's go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul mentions eventually meeting Titus here in verse 5. He says, for even when we came into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were afflicted on every side, conflicts without, fears within. But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted in you, as he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. And he goes on and he mentions a few other things. So Paul had sent Titus to Troas, or Titus to Corinth, with the second letter, wanted to meet Titus in Troas to hear how they received the letter. Okay? Paul gets to Troas, doesn't meet Titus there, and he says, I didn't meet him. I had no rest for my spirit, not finding my brother Titus. So he continues on into Macedonia. So, you know, Acts doesn't record Paul speaking in Troas. It just has that, doesn't even mention him stopping in Troas. But, of course, it does record him coming back through that area. Okay? In Acts chapter 20, let's go back there. Keep your finger in Corinthians. Acts chapter 20, verses 6 through 12, this is Paul coming back through Troas as he leaves from Greece, Achaia, Corinth, etc., etc. On the first day of the week, verse 6, we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to Troas within 5 days, and there we stayed 7 days. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. There were many lamps in the upper room. We'll stop there for just a second. So you can see that Paul, he didn't spend a lot of time in Troas on the way through, but on the way back he did. He stays there for 7 days, and we'll get to that in just a bit. So, if this door that he's mentioning in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, chapter 2, verse 12, if it was about Troas, it seems unlikely to me that he would have stopped briefly and then continued on if the door had been opened to him in Troas. Okay? It seems unlikely to me that that's the case. Okay, so that's the first possibility, is that it could be his opportunity to preach in Troas, which he didn't really do a lot of on the way through to Macedonia. The second could be a reference to something that Paul mentions in Romans, chapter 15. Now, let's go over to Romans chapter 15. Oh, geez. No wonder I can't find it after Corinthians. All right, so Romans chapter 15. It's kind of a side comment that he makes in his letter. We'll just start here in verse 18. He says, "For I will not presume to speak of anything except what Christ has accomplished through me, resulting in the obedience of the Gentiles by word and deed, in the power of signs and wonders, in the power of spirit, so that from Jerusalem and round about, as far as Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ." Okay. You notice you don't find any record of Paul ever preaching in Illyricum in the book of Acts. This is the only place that it's mentioned. So where is Illyricum? Well, if you look on your map, it's not on there. Because guess what? There's no recording of it in the book of Acts. He didn't go there, at least not recorded in the book of Acts. Illyricum would be at the top of your map. It borders Macedonia to the north. So it is the province directly north of Macedonia and just across the sea from Italy, from Rome. Okay. Now, Acts, as I mentioned, doesn't record a missionary journey to the area, and it is possible that he was merely saying that he preached up to the border of the province. Okay, so I was trying to think of an example that we could use, and, you know, I guess we could say that the gospel has gone as far as the borders of North Dakota. Okay, well, what does that mean? Does that mean it goes into North Dakota and doesn't go past North Dakota? Or does it mean it goes up to Montana and doesn't go into North Dakota? Depending upon your interpretation, the answer is yes. Okay? So, now, this is a possibility that he took the opportunity, that he saw an open door to go into Illyricum from Macedonia, and he wanted to take advantage of it. It is a possibility. If he had preached in the province, we would presume that the trip to Illyricum was brief and probably by himself, as any time spent in the area was not recorded in the book of Acts. So he may have gone into Illyricum. And probably, if that was the case, if this is the door that he was talking about in 2 Corinthians, he went into the area and maybe had an opportunity to preach there. Don't know. Okay? The third possibility is that this open door that he encountered while he was in Troas could be a reference to further preaching opportunities in Macedonia. Paul had already preached in the area, obviously, on a second missionary journey. Remember the Macedonian call? Okay, and of course, Luke also records that Paul, in Acts chapter 20, verse 2, that he had gone through Macedonia and given them much exhortation, and he went to Greece. So, whatever the case, I don't know. I just found it interesting that he mentions this open door, and if you look at it, it doesn't really give you an answer as to what the door was or where it led. So, I think there's three possibilities there. There are others if you want to go way down the rabbit hole, but I think these three make the most sense. Take your pick. Whatever the case may be, Paul saw an opportunity to preach the gospel, and he did take advantage of it. So whatever the case, Paul doesn't find Titus in Troas, and he continues on towards Macedonia, 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 13, is one of the ones we read there, so let's just go back and replant that. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 13, he says, "I had no rest for my spirit, not finding Titus, my brother, but taking my leave of them, I went on to Macedonia." So, Paul continues on into the area of Macedonia, does not spend a lot of time in Troas, and then we'll jump into Macedonia here in just a second. Anybody have any questions or comments? Anything I may have missed in that? No? Okay. So, Paul, of course, has some deep concern for the condition of the church, specifically at Corinth. This is one of the reasons he wanted to meet Titus on the way back from Corinth after delivering the letter. So he goes into Macedonia, where Titus brings him some comforting news. So 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Man, got my numbers all switched around today. 2 Corinthians chapter 7. We read a little bit of this, but I want to read some more of this context where Paul does encounter Titus, and he hears about how the church in Corinth receives the letter. Verse 5, he says, "For even when we had come into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were afflicted on every side, conflicts without, fears within. But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted in you, as he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more." So let's stop for just a second. Now remember, the letter that he's referencing is the second letter that he's written. Okay? Because remember, the first one isn't recorded in the New Testament. It just records that he had written the letter, but we don't know what the content of it was. So Paul has Titus deliver this message, wants to hear how they received it, and the message that he gets back is that they thank you for the letter. We wanted to hear from you. That they were longing to hear from him even more. Verse 8, he says, "For though I caused you sorrow by my letter, I do not regret it. Though I did regret it, for I see that the letter caused you sorrow, though only for a while, I now rejoice that you were made sorrowful, but that you were made sorrowful to the point of repentance, for you were made sorrowful according to the will of God, so that you might not suffer loss in anything through us." So Paul, he's encouraged by what he's heard from Titus concerning the letter and how it was received. Jump down to verse 13. "For this reason we have been comforted, and besides our comfort, we rejoiced even more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. For if in anything I have boasted to him about you, I was not put to shame, but as we spoke all things to you in truth, so also our boasting before Titus proved to be truth. His affection abounds all the more towards you, as he remembers the obedience of you all, how you received him with fear and trembling. I rejoice that in everything I have confidence in you." So you stop and consider this for just a second. Paul had labored to build the church in Corinth. We covered a little bit about what the first letter contained, or technically the second, but 1 Corinthians recorded in the New Testament, what it contained. It wasn't like the letter to the Thessalonians. It wasn't like the letter to the Philippians. It was more of a hammer. You guys got to get this figured out. Grow up. Okay? Not a letter that, you know, when my wife and I were dating and we lived in separate towns, we wrote letters. Some of you are like, "What's that?" Letters are things written on paper and they're put in envelopes, and then it takes a few days for them to get there. So my wife and I, when we were growing up when we were dating, we would write letters to each other, and every once in a while, my wife would put like a little smiley face or something on the front of it, or I hope I never put hearts on it or anything like that, because I'd have to turn in my man card. But, you know, this is not the kind of letter. 1 Corinthians, it's recorded in the New Testament, is not the kind of letter you would stick in an envelope and put a smiley face on. Okay? So this letter was one that he was afraid of how they were going to receive it. And so it was very encouraging to him to hear how they received it. It was very positive. And Paul writes about how not only did they receive the letter well, but they received him who brought the letter. So Titus was refreshed and he was encouraged by the church in Corinth. By the way, if you ever have to be disciplined by someone, this is how you receive it. Receive it for what it is. Receive it for the fact that somebody who, if they're going to discipline you in terms or point something out to you maybe that you need to change, they're doing it for your good. Because I have four children. I never enjoyed disciplining them. Oh man, I'm so glad that fill in the blank screwed up today and I get to discipline them. Yee-hee! And most people who are in a leadership position don't enjoy that either. So it wasn't like Paul was just itching to write that letter so he could really hand it to the Corinthians. No. But it has to be done. So it's a good reminder of how to receive discipline from a scriptural perspective. All right. So enough about that. Paul preaches throughout Macedonia. As I mentioned, he had preached in Macedonia on his second journey. That's from Acts chapter 16 all the way through 17. He established churches in Philippi, in Thessalonica, and Berea in Macedonia. Okay, if you look on your little map, it's that orange section there. And on this trip, he appears, as I mentioned, to venture into Illyricum from Romans chapter 15, verse 19. While he was there, on the third missionary journey, the brethren gave generously for the relief of the church in Jerusalem. Let's go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. So remember, about this time, the church in Jerusalem was really struggling. There was a famine. It's not good. They're suffering. So Paul had been encouraging the churches to give for the sake of the relief of the church in Jerusalem. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. So we urge Titus that as he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well. But just as you abound in everything in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all earnestness and in the love we inspired in you, see that you abound in this gracious work also. I am not speaking this as a command, but as proving through the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love also. So Paul writes about how the brethren in the area had given generously to the church in Jerusalem. And it is interesting how he puts that, verse 2, in that great ordeal, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. They gave generously to the church in support of the church in Jerusalem. There we go. All right. So, also, while he's in Macedonia, Timothy rejoins Paul and joins Paul in writing 2 Corinthians. So 2 Corinthians chapter 1. So all of this is happening while Paul is in Macedonia. Just want to remind you of that. So Timothy joins Paul and he joins him in writing 2 Corinthians chapter 1 verse 1. Paul, an apostle of Christ Jesus by the will of God, and Timothy our brother, to the church of God, which is at Corinth, with all the saints who are throughout Achaia. So, Timothy joins back up with Paul, and he writes 2 Corinthians. So, 2 Corinthians, let's cover that real briefly. The purpose was ultimately to vindicate Paul's manner of life, his apostleship, and the things that he'd been doing, and to encourage the church in Jerusalem, in Corinth. The theme was really to remind them, hey, we haven't done anything wrong here, guys. We've encouraged you. We've worked hard for you. Open your hearts to us. There's three basic sections in the book. Paul explains the ministry of reconciliation, 2 Corinthians chapter 1 through verse 7. He talks about the collection for the saints in verses 8 and 9. And then he defends his apostolic authority in chapters 10 through 13. So, also while in Macedonia, Titus and two brethren are sent to Corinth. Okay, so 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 16, says, "But thanks be to God who puts the same earnestness on your behalf in the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted our appeal, but being himself very earnest, he has gone to you of his own accord. We have sent along with him the brother whose fame in the things of the gospel has spread through all the churches. And not only this, but he has also been appointed by the churches to travel with us in this gracious work, which is being administered by us for the glory of the Lord himself, and to show our readiness, taking precaution, so that no one will discredit us in our administration of this generous gift. For we have regard for what is honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. We have sent with them our brother, whom we have often tested and found diligent in many things, but now even more diligent because of his great confidence in you. Oh, we'll read the last two verses there. As for Titus, he is my partner and my fellow worker among you. As for our brethren, they are messengers of the churches, a glory to Christ. Therefore, openly before the churches, show them the proof of your love and of our reason for boasting about you. So, there are two brethren who are unnamed and who had accompanied Titus to Corinth. So verse 18 refers to him as the brother of fame, if you will. And verse 22, another anonymous brother who had also been tested and found diligent. Likely bringing this letter with them to the church in Corinth. So to assist, he had written with Titus or about Titus that he was going to assist the Corinthians concerning the collection that he had previously talked about. If you read chapter 9, verses 1 through 5, he talks about that a little bit more. So there's a lot going on here when Paul is in Macedonia. He's not there on holiday. He's there continuing to do the work. He writes letters. He's sending people to encourage. Reminds them of the collection that they had promised that they would be a part of. And then he continues on into Achaia. Achaia is Greece. So it's where you're going to see like Athens and Corinth. And so he continues on there. Let's jump back to Acts chapter 20. Okay, before we get to that, any questions or comments? Have I lost all of you? The point is that there's a lot going on when Paul's in an area, especially an area that he'd been before. He sees it as an opportunity to go in, to encourage the saints, and to kind of prop them up and to fill in some gaps and to take opportunity to maybe push the gospel and the understanding of a little bit further, to edify the church and to continue to build them up so that they can continue to do the work. Mr. Toole.
Well, it's also just a great reminder that the Lord's will be done, causing all things to come together for his glory. Mm-hmm. They set out the first time, kind of the first missionary journey, spent a lot of time in the region of Galatia. They head back. They're like, let's go back and encourage the congregations that we established. And then they end up getting pushed into Asia. And you get the idea that they kind of want to start turning north, maybe back towards home, as they're trying to get into Asia and Bithynia, and they're not allowed to. So then they're forced to go into Macedonia, and then, you know, the jailer and his household are converted. So you see God's will being done there. And then they get ran all the way down into Achaia. Mm-hmm. So, okay, time to get home. So he hops on a boat, hits Ephesus, goes home. So now he's out on this third missionary journey. He's working his way back through the same route he had taken his second missionary journey, finds himself in Macedonia, and then here, in these few verses that you're about to jump back into, it's like Macedonia, Achaia, gone. Like, just done, right? Mm-hmm. But when he's back down there in the region of Corinth, he says in verse 3, he was gonna set sail for Syria, mm-hmm. which would have been following the same path he took in the second missionary journey. He would have hopped on a boat and started working through the Mediterranean to get back to Syria, which is just north of Jerusalem, right? This plot comes, forces him back north to go through all that country again. So just, I'm just really encouraged by it, because it's like, you know, you know, there's just lots of times when we look out and we're like, how is this the Lord's will? Or, you know, it's like, having, you know, these obstacles come up in our life and God's directing the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. So we've got a couple minutes here. Let's just kind of set the stage for next week. Let's go back to Acts chapter 20. We'll read verses 2 and 3. He says, when he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. And there he spent 3 months. And when a plot was formed against him by the Jews as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. So as Mr. Toole had pointed out, Paul's intention originally was to to kind of get back to Jerusalem relatively quickly. Now, we'll see as we continue on here that there's a time frame that the scriptures give us in how much time he would have had to get from Achaia, Macedonia, Asia, back to Jerusalem. Okay? We'll get to that probably next week, and we'll chat a little bit more about it when we get there. So Paul spends 3 months in Greece, and it included his third visit to Corinth. Paul, remember, he tells them, "Hey, I'm going to come to you." 2 Corinthians chapter 12. So this letter that was most likely being delivered by Titus and the two brethren, he actually writes in there, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 14, he says, "Here for this third time, I am ready to come to you, and I will not be a burden to you, for I do not seek what is yours, but you, for children are not responsible to save it for their parents, but parents for their children." So Paul's warning them. This is the third time I'm coming to them, or he's maybe alerting them to it. Warning's probably a little strong, but he's coming back to them again. He hopes that this visit that he's going to enjoy, if you will, in Corinth, would be one that would be not sorrowful. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 1. He says, "But I determined this for my own sake, that I would not come to you in sorrow again." So apparently his visit and possibly some writings, which you look at 1 Corinthians, there was definitely some sorrow involved there. He also hoped that this visit wouldn't be embarrassing for them. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, he's speaking in regards to the offering. Verse 3, "But I have sent the brethren in order that our boasting about you may not be made empty in this case, so that as I was saying, you may be prepared. Otherwise, if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to speak of you, will be put to shame by this confidence." So basically he's like, if anybody else comes with us, I just want you to be prepared so that, you know, you don't continue the conflict, if you will. And there's a whole bunch of historical information we can go into, but it's not super relevant. But the point is that he wanted the Corinthians to be prepared for his visit and be prepared to give what they had said that they would. And also, he also hoped that this visit would not require stern judgment as he had had to meet out in the past. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 20, says, "For I am afraid that perhaps when I come I may find you to be not what I wish, and may be found by you to be not what you wish, that perhaps there will be strife, jealousy, angry tempers, disputes, slanders, gossip, arrogance, disturbances. I am afraid that when I come again, my God may humiliate me before you, and I may mourn over many of those who have sinned in the past and not repented of the impurity, immorality, and sensuality which they have practiced." He's kind of giving him a heads up. Please, let's have a great visit here. Let's get things straightened out, okay? He continues on here in chapter 13. He says, "This is the third time I am coming to you. Every fact is to be confirmed by the testimony of two or three witnesses. I have previously said when present the second time, and though now absent, I say in advance to those who have sinned in the past, and to all the rest as well, that if I come again, I will not spare anyone. Since you are seeking for proof of the Christ who speaks in me and who is not weak toward you, but mighty in you." The first letter was a hammer. Well, the first recorded letter was a hammer. The second one was basically, I'm bringing my axe and my 238s this time. Okay, so let's get this right. He's really encouraging the church in Corinth to make sure that they have repented. So, Paul, this visit that he spends in Greece is going to include some time in Corinth, obviously. And while he's there, he writes the book of Romans, which we will cover next week. Okay. Any questions or comments? We're a little bit over, but we don't have anybody standing in the back, so.
Anytime I read through Corinthians, I'm just reminded of the fact of, like, when you make a commitment, you know, the 1 Corinthians and then 2 Corinthians follow through. And it's human nature. Everybody's excited to make a commitment. hard to follow through.
Yeah.
And this message is not short of what God's message is. A lot of people think they got grace, and we do, in time. Mm-hmm. But that time ends sometime.
Yeah.
And when he comes back, if we're sitting in Christ and we got 5-10 years down the line, we got sin we haven't handled, there's not grace in that.
Mm.
God is serious about what he says, and he says get it handled.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's definitely, you can look at a number of them. Shall we continue in sin so that grace may increase? Obviously, may it never be. Paul's holding them to account. Hey, there's a judge, and he's going to judge you. Look at 2 Corinthians, 5:10, about we'll all stand before the judgment seat of Christ is a good point. He's reminding them, guys, let's get this straight. And the things that were happening in Corinth were absolutely worldly, cultural influences and had no place in the church. So, all right. Thank you for your kind attention.